Session 136, March 1, 1965. Early Sessions, Volume 3. Good evening. Rob. Good evening, Seth. Seth. Before we begin with other material, I would suggest that Rupert set aside one day a week for the marketing of his own manuscripts. During the rest of the week, he should, if possible, forget about the marketing aspect. This is a suggestion, and that is all. The components of the electrical universe are drawn from all energy, in a manner that could be described as a cosmic juggling act. For this energy is never still, and it goes without saying that no electrical impulse is stable from one instant of reality to the next. That is, it is never the same or identical impulse. It is not identical. It is not, therefore, of the same intensity, though it may contain the same approximate electrical mass. Change alone allows for the possibility of identity within any universe, for without change there can be no value fulfillment, no experience, and no identity. Portions of the electrical universe are projected into many fields. Therefore, electricity to some degree is recognized as a reality within many fields. Practically, your own identities exist electronically, as I have explained, in codified form. At some later occasion, we shall go into seeming duplications, for such duplications are only apparent, of a nature that could be compared to a reflective result. In such cases almost, though not entirely without exception, such a duplicate is projected by an original electronically. We are not quite ready yet for this material. I wanted, however, to mention the possibility of such occurrences, since such projections have and do happen with some frequency. If you will consider the projection of a thought that is intangible, so that it affects another individual, and hence both directly and indirectly affects the action of physical matter, then you may consider the possibility of other such projections. We have here a rather delicate point. I have said that there are no duplicates, yet you may say, are not some thoughts duplicates? The variations may indeed be slight, but the variations are always present. A thought transmitted knowingly or unknowingly by A is not perceived the same thought when it reaches receiver B. The thought originally held by A is still retained by A, yet a seemingly identical thought reaches B. A has lost nothing. That is, in sending the thought, in trying to duplicate the thought, he himself still retains it. So what is passed on to receiver B? This is rather important, since an explanation will do much to account for the frequent differences that occur in telepathic communications. Whether or not A, the sender, knowingly transmits this apparent duplicate, at the point of its transmission, the sender forms an electrical impulse pattern that is supposed to duplicate the original thought. But no such identical duplication is possible, as far as I know, within reality of any kind. A side note, identical twins, for example, are hardly identical. As soon as the attempt is made to duplicate the original thought, then we find that the attempt itself strains and pulls. The impulses change minutely or to a greater degree. The point that I want to make here is that any attempt at such duplication actually forces, because of the nature of the attempt, the impulses to line up in a different pattern. When B receives the thought, it is already a new thought, bearing great resemblance to the original. But it is not the identical thought. In this case, action forces change, and by the very nature of action, no such duplication can occur. It may be said, for practical reasons, that A and B have identical thoughts, but the thoughts are not identical. I suggest a break. An identity is, by definition, the natural one. An identity can appear, be perceived, in more than one place, but in such a case, there is but one identity, being viewed from many perspectives. We will be going into some matters that may appear complicated in the telling, but this is only the effect, again, of the necessity to use words in a single strung-out fashion, one before the other. Regardless of any seeming contradictions that might appear before this particular subject matter is covered, identities by nature cannot be duplicated. I cannot explain everything at once, and so obviously many questions would remain unanswered until we get to them. For the original thought, as an identity, to actually be transmitted to a sender, you would have to face the inevitable result. If the identical thought were actually transmitted from A to B, then A would have it no longer. Since A obviously may still have the original thought, then B has not the identical thought, not an exact duplicate, but instead a similar but still unidentified thought. Prime identities cannot be duplicated. Duplication, exact duplication, is always merely an effect of insufficient knowledge. In some cases, two thoughts may appear indeed identical, but whether or not examination can show it, such exact duplication is impossible. Now, when receiver B receives this transmitted thought, he may react and interpret that part of the thought that is similar to the original. He may, on the other hand, react to and interpret portions of the thought that are not similar. He may then react and interpret the similarity or the differences. His reaction here depends upon several circumstances, including the intensity of the electrical pulsations that compose the thought, and his own inner facility in reacting to particular ranges of intensities. Habitually, individuals establish various overall frequencies that they are able to handle, for various reasons that I believe I explained to you somewhat earlier. An individual will therefore feel more at home operating within certain frequencies, and he will feel less at home with others. The original thought is used as a pattern, therefore, for the creation of a new electrical reality, which may or may not be directed at any given receiver. It is obvious that the attempt to duplicate is present, and were it not for this attempt to duplicate, then there would be little similarity between any separate identities. Because of the nature of this material, I would suggest another break. Rob notes, break at 9:54, Jane was well dissociated. She said she thought it was a good session because, quote, my head feels as though there's absolutely nothing else in it but the session, quote, end quote. She thought Seth was trying to use her abilities as best he could in order to present the material without mix-up. Seth, identical realities, therefore, do not exist, and any such appearances should be a tip-off that an error has been made. Now, the nature of the thought that is received by our sender B is determined by many factors. We shall merely consider a few of these. These include, to begin with, the original intensity of the thought as A possesses it, A's ability to duplicate the thought as far as possible, the relative stability of the electrical thought unit as it is formed by A, the familiarity or unfamiliarity of the range of frequencies that compose the new thought to any intended receiver. The receiver will understand and interpret in general the intensity range that he is in the habit of using himself. Some, or a portion of, the transmitted thought may fall within his range, and some may not. He may pick up the portions of the thought which are similar to the main thought, in which case some scientific proof of sorts can be achieved. It may happen, however, that the dissimilarity is what falls within his particular accustomed range, in which case proof would be inadequate. Such thoughts will be received by those individuals in whom a variety of circumstances happen to occur simultaneously. Now, I have told you that emotions also possess an electrical reality. Thoughts formed and sent out from the impulse range of emotion often succeed because of the peculiar nature of emotional electrical impulses themselves. They have a particularly strong electrical mass. They also usually fall within powerful intensities. For reasons that we will not discuss this evening, Thoughts formed under a strong emotional impetus will carry greater vividness, have a greater tendency toward duplication, and are apt to be interpreted with some success. Also, all individuals have had familiarity with emotions, as they exist within electrical intensities, and are accustomed to reacting to them. The whole process is instantaneous. However, the thought, which is now an approximation of the original thought, and actually an identity of its own. The thought is changed once more by the receiver. He does not interpret the thought. He interprets its meanings and forms a new thought identity. With our new system of communication, interruptions are shocking to Rupert. I suggest that we end this evening's session. Rob. Good night, Seth. End 10:30:28. Jane was dissociated as usual. We did not like to see the session end so abruptly, since interruptions have evidently become something of a hazard because of Jane's deep trance state. We have decided to move the sessions into our bedroom. We have room for a desk and a chair there, but better yet, the room is isolated from the entrance by three doors. They add up to a soundproof barrier. Jane said that an interruption while she is in this new deeper state is like being doused with ice water. It is really shocking, and she does not want to go through it if it can be avoided. Section 137, March 3, 1965. Early Sessions, Volume 3. Good evening. Rob. Good evening, Seth. Seth. The new arrangement should work out well, now although it would not have in the past. Our last session was an extremely fruitful one, and much of that material will be important in our future discussions. We will further consider this evening the nature of identities. In our earlier discussions concerning the nature of matter, we made it plain that each individual created any given material object through use of the inner senses and following certain rules which were mentioned. Since any materialization is in effect a meditation between what we may call an ideal, which is by nature of itself not materialized, and a practical working perceivable symbol of the ideal, each materialization must be composed of some camouflage elements. Within the physical field, these perceivable symbols are composed of matter, which is a conglomeration of atoms and molecules. Each individual creating, say, his version of any given chair, uses entirely different atoms and molecules in his subconscious construction of it. He sees or perceives only his own construction. A rereading of sessions dealing with the nature of matter will help you here. The chair created then by any given individual and perceived by him is an identity in that it exists at any given time without any exact duplication. Basically, for any duplication to appear, the exact atoms and molecules would have to be used, and this is obviously impossible. The chair is an identity, and yet at no given moment is it the same chair, for already the atoms and molecules that compose it have changed and been replaced by others. This process is explained thoroughly also in the mentioned previous sections. Rob notes, among others, see the 60th through the 65th sessions. Seth, there are obviously many kinds of identities. Now in our last session, I told you that our imaginary sender A does not transmit a given thought. He does not even send an exact duplicate. Action, the very action of transmission, alters the nature, the electrical reality of the thought itself. This is an extremely important point. Nor does the receiver receive the thought in the same condition. The thought, the original thought, is retained by A. A, however, forms a thought as nearly identical as his possibilities allow it to be. This he transmits to B, but B can't receive the thought in its present condition, for the act of receiving a thought also changes it. He forms a thought as nearly identical as possible and interprets it. Actions can never be considered apart from that which is seemingly acted upon. for action becomes a part of the structure. Action begins from within and is a result of inner vitality inherent in all realities. Some action is always present. Action itself is not a thing alone. It is not an identity. Action is a dimension of existence. Action is a dimension arising out of existence. It cannot be considered separately. It may appear in many guises due to the nature of the particular reality of which it is part, and it involves much more than motion. Action may be considered also simply as the spontaneous nature of the inward vitality toward various expressive materializations. There is no separate outside identity or force, such as force. The two words here are being used with different meanings. There is no separate force that causes action. All of these points are extremely important. And if I speak slowly, it is to ensure words as nearly correct as possible. Action is perceivable in some cases and not in others. Action is more like growth than force. It is a byproduct of any reality and a part of all reality. You should be able to see many implications here when you read this material over. Again, action involves more than movement, as you think of movement. For value fulfillment is action. A dream involves action, not only the action within the dream, but the action of dreaming itself. You may here get a glimmering of the connection between certain types of action and distance. As I have mentioned it briefly, there is always action within action, and any reality or any experience is instantaneous action. Motion is the type of action with which you are most familiar, but motion attains its importance within the physical field only because of your particular outer senses. For much action is entirely imperceivable by you, particularly on a conscious level. The continued existence of your physical body is determined by action. Although consciously, you are not aware of this most of the time. Action may not seem to be going anyplace. Action, by its nature, while part of every reality, necessarily changes that reality and forms from it a new reality. This should be obvious. There will be much more in this material when you read it than you may at first realize. Action approximates as nearly as possible that portion of inner vitality or energy which cannot be completely materialized within any camouflage, within any plane. Action itself cannot be directly, underlined, perceived for this reason. But its effects upon camouflage can often be perceived. This material is leading up to some future discussions, and the nature of action will be most important. Action is as valid whether an act is conscious and voluntary or whether it occurs within a dream or within a thought. It is as much a reality either way. Again, it is not an outside force. It arises from within the inner vitality of which all camouflage is composed. To some degree, it is a result of inner vitality's attempt to completely express itself in materializations, and its inability to do so. I suggest you break. As yet, your scientists and physicists have a very limited concept of action. Their laws concerning action and force will only apply within the physical field. Action is basically electrical, but within your field, only the most obvious forms of electrical action have been perceived. In this one respect, your technology has let you down. But the electrical manifestations of which I speak could not even be searched for or anticipated within your physical field until the reality of man's psychic nature began to make itself known. And it is only now beginning to become apparent. Discovery of these other electrical realities will explain much that previously could not be explained. All realities with which you will be concerned and with which mankind is intimately concerned are built up electrically. A dream is as valid an electrical reality as a lightning bolt, the difference being that the lightning bolt projects itself into your awareness through the outer senses. We shall have to consider, later, color as it appears in dreams. But this is not the time for such a discussion. Identities exist within dreams also, and here the same nature of identities applies as those given earlier. The laws of action also apply here in the dream reality. Rob notes, Jane took a very long pause. She had paused many times while speaking since last break. Seth, action is not affected by time as you know it. Action also takes place within the spacious present. You may, however, only perceive parts of action in your time breakdown. Ideally, psychological time experiences will allow you to perceive action more clearly and directly. The ego attempts to control action by standing apart from it. Any such division is arbitrary and in no way affects the nature of action itself. All that changes is your perception of it. By slowing down this perception of action, man imagines that he has lengthened time. This, of course, is not the case. He merely succeeds in perceiving action as bits and pieces and fights its flow. On the one hand, action is indeed simultaneous, yet in it all action is contained, for it occurs within the unlimited spacious present. In dreams, action is given more freedom and allowed to flow in a less hampered fashion. The result is an effect of more rather than less time, and in many cases, the deepening of perspectives. Action does not occur along any given line or direction exclusively, though you may perceive its motion in only one direction. It is a portion of other dimensions. Here again, consideration of dreams in terms of action should make this point fairly clear. In dreams also, where no space as you know it exists, you have complete freedom of space. When the ego gives up its hold upon what it considers control of action, then, as in dreams, almost any action is possible. And when the ego gives up its claim of space in a dream, all space is available. We may end the session, or if you prefer, you may take a break and I will continue. Rob, all right then, I guess we'll take a short break. Break at 10:26. Because Jane did not appear tired, I took the opportunity of adding a little material to tonight's very slow session. Jane was dissociated as usual and said she was not aware of speaking so slowly. She spoke at a much faster rate when she resumed at 10:34. Seth, action always involves change. Again, it may not involve motion in terms with which you usually refer. There are many kinds of motion, for example, that you do not perceive as motion within the physical field. Action tampers with identity. Yet, were it not for action, identity would be impossible. It may, here, sound like a contradiction, but to remain an identity must completely renew itself, and each renewal is indeed a termination. Yet, without the termination, no new action on the part of the identity would be possible. And without action, no identity can be aware of its own existence. Remember here, however, that by action we do not necessarily mean motion as you perceive it. Action is the breath of inner vitality, of which all materializations of any kind are composed. It represents, again, the relationship between unexpressed inner vitality and materialized vitality. There is always an imbalance here that may of itself be termed action. It cannot be perceived as any one thing, for it is a relationship and a dimension. It can be perceived most directly and with less distortion in the dream state. For here it is allowed the freedom of itself. Here you have also the inner vitality that has not been materialized within the realm of material camouflage. You have the tendency of this inner vitality to materialize, and its inability to completely do so. In the dream state, the tendency for this vitality to materialize meets with little resistance. Action within actions result without physical space. Distances appear and are experienced as such. Action is much less limited. Rather, action itself is not less limited, but you can experience action with less limitations. For the ego, which erects such limitations, lets down its guard. I would suggest that this session and last session be read over most carefully, for again, they will be used as a basis for further material. My best and heartiest wishes and a very pleasant good evening. Rob. Good evening, Seth.